Michiganders, for the first time since March, are no longer under a stay-at-home order. Governor Whitmer moving to the next phase of her reopening plan. Up next, a special media meet compiling the last couple of months of coronavirus coverage here on WNMU. The conversations we shared, our guests, and the messages to remember as we move forward. Welcome to Media Meet. I'm your host, Elizabeth Peterson. This week, we're doing things a bit differently again. As we all start to re-engage with our communities, our families, our friends, we wanted to take a moment to look back on the last couple of months. Let us not forget, and let us hold tight to the lessons and the moments of light we saw and felt. This is by no means over. Social distancing practices remain in place. Residents are still required to wear masks in public spaces. Gatherings of more than 100 people are not allowed. Businesses are opening under strict guidelines, and Michiganders are reminded to remain cautious and careful. Over the next 25 minutes, the people who shared their time, knowledge, and insight with us as we worked to keep you informed and safe. I want to welcome today's guests in the studio here at WNMU, State Representative Sarah Cambenzi, and via Zoom, Marquette Superintendent Bill Saunders and Negaunee Superintendent Dan Skews. Also, later in the program, we'll be joined by Marquette business owner Bill Dignight and Munising business owner Tom Dulaski.
I think even for state legislators, we weren't sure where this was going to go. It is a play-by-play, minute-by-minute, day-by-day, even hour-by-hour, where we're getting updates, we're coming back together, talking in small groups, what do we think the best solution is for certain situations, and going from there. The amount of small businesses that came forward and just said, you know, if you have students or people that need a meal, absolutely, we're going to step up and help you and give that to you. So. Hats off to all of our small businesses and certainly our public schools who are still serving those students with their lunch programs during this time.
Sure. And we do have Bill Saunders and Dan Skews via Zoom. So for Bill and Dan, talk to us about what that closure, getting that that order from the governor, what that was like for you.
If I can start, I would certainly say that I think that was absolutely the right call to close school. Having about 3,300 students that we do here in Marquette, we had already had students with early breaks that had dispersed all over the country that potentially could have brought the virus back to our school system, back to our community. And I think just taking that break and having folks start to quarantine a little bit certainly was in the best interest of the safety for our students and staff.
And Dan, how about for you?
Yeah, I agree with Bill. It was definitely a shock when we got the call at 11 o'clock last Thursday, but without a doubt, it was the right thing to do. Like Bill had mentioned, some students had left early for spring break. We didn't know, you know, what they were exposed to. And whether we're in school or not, our number one goal is to have the students safe. That's the top priority. And whether it's with coronavirus or them within the walls of our building, we want to make sure that they're safe. And by closing school, we're ensuring that, hopefully, as long as they're following the quarantine guidelines that are being set.
The communities who supports us and takes care of us, and at the heart of our mission, my brother and Alyssa Diggs and Double Trouble, it's if we take care of their community, they're going to take care of us. So you have to help. We need to take care of our neighbors. It's the right thing to do. It's the best thing to do. So you don't want to see people struggle. And my parents always taught us that you give until it hurts and then you keep giving and hopefully it'll come back to you. So I just got to take care of our community.
Business ownership is always hard. It comes in cycles. It's never been like this. But when it gets really difficult, I get up in the morning and I challenge myself to figure out what I can do to help. You know, just it tends to take the stress off of me. And I say, you know what, to heck with it. I got to do something. You just wake up in the morning when things are nasty and things are dark. You try to shine light on it. You try to find a way to help. And hopefully we all blink our eyes and it's July 1st and things start to clear up.
No one's alone in this. We're all kind of trudging along together. And I mean, we have two people here today and the measures they're taking to help one another. If there's any light in that, it's these moments where you see so much good and kindness. What have you seen as you've been talking to your constituents and moving around?
There's a lot of understanding out there. I think we as legislators didn't know what to expect. This is moving rapidly. We're making a lot of big decisions that impact families and businesses in a matter of days, sometimes hours. But people seem to understand that.
We're operating with a very small staff here today, taking all the necessary precautions to put this show together. It's just me in the studio, and today's guests are joining us via Zoom. They are NMU President Fritz Erickson and NMU Chief of Police Mike Bath. I want to thank you both for joining us. I know these last couple of weeks, of course, they've been very busy for you both. Information coming through the state, the federal government, information being updated and changing almost daily, if not by the hour sometimes. First, talk to us about what it's been like for you managing the response of the university, making decisions that affect so many people, students, parents, faculty, staff. President Erickson, let's start with you. Talk about that moment when you realized this would be life-altering.
You know, we've been so busy and working so hard that it's hard to even think back 2 weeks ago. Two weeks ago seems almost like a lifetime ago for us. What we've been working on since then has been trying to adapt to a very, very fluid situation. And that's really what's defined this whole issue. It's what's defined our whole response to it. It's what's defined how we continue to look forward to the future.
Police Chief Bath, what about for you? What has that been like, that moment when you realized that this was going to change campus for quite some time?
It was pretty daunting task when you start thinking about we're a city within a city and the amount of people that we have and the amount of infrastructure that we need to maintain in order to keep the university operating under the guidelines of the various guidance that we were getting from the federal, state, and local authorities. We worked very closely with the health department, and our medical director, Dr. Kirkpatrick, spent quite a bit of time trying to find out what are the recommendations for if we were to have somebody test positive or be under suspicion, and trying to figure out how we were going to manage that here on campus. To echo President Erickson, we were talking about that here in my office today. It seems like it's been a month we've been working on this, and the executive order just came out this week. So lots of work going on, lots of things to keep going. But ultimately, at the end of the day, our primary responsibility is the safety of our faculty, staff, students, and the local community, because many of our students live in the local community, and we're working very closely to keep everybody safe.
The university, it has an emergency response team. So a group of campus leaders trained for different scenarios. Mike, perhaps you could talk us through the makeup of this group. I know that you're co-chair with Cindy Pavala. Who else is a part of this team?
So the president is the main person for the team. We give guidance to the president to make the ultimate decisions, but it's comprised of the vice presidents for each division: facilities, human resources, risk management, and members of the president's office. And we meet and talk about scenarios. You know, we try to figure out what would happen if. And I can guarantee you, we wouldn't have dreamed this one up. I don't think anybody would have sat down at a table and thought this one and all the different nuances that have happened in the guidance and executive orders that have come out both at the federal and state level. But we also then have what we call our B team, which is the next level down. And then we pull from those. So for instance, this one is deals directly with a health issue. We bring our medical director into that group. We've brought housing, we've brought dining representatives, because those were the two areas, housing and dining, that we needed to keep operational. And then we sit down, we met pretty regularly. We're still meeting regularly, and we're actually doing it on conference calls and Zoom now for the most part. But we talk through what needs to get done and how we're going to operate in keeping everybody safe.
President Erickson, talk about the work that you've done and the work that you've seen this team do. You have a long history in higher education. Obviously, you put together a team like this and you hope that you don't have to rely on them the way that you have been the last couple of weeks. What has that all been like?
Well, we've been very fortunate to have such a talented group of individuals led by Mike Bath, all of our vice presidents. Everyone on the university has contributed greatly to this issue. And we've asked people for their opinions, and we've had some pretty direct kinds of discussions and been able to come to decisions that I think have really helped guide us in a lot of different and, of course, very positive kinds of ways with this. And so I said the other day to our board, I said I couldn't imagine trying to deal with this level of crisis without the talented group of individuals that we have on our team. And that goes from the administration through the faculty and staff and very much our students. Our students have played a very important role in how we've responded to all of the issues that are going on.
We're still barely brushing the surface of the people, the organizations, the wave of encouragement, support, and hard work happening in the Upper Peninsula right now. I want to welcome everyone who is joining us here today. Senator Ed McBroom, Denise Bannon with Hearts of Hope, Masks for Marquette, Becky LeBrec, the director of MAPS Makerspace and the force behind Upper Makers United, Derek Christian with NMU School of Art and Design, Rachel Bannon Hutter with Feeding the Frontline, and musician Alyssa Palmer. Like I said, a lot of people doing amazing things all around us. We are going to start with Senator Ed McBroom. Senator, there's obviously been so much going on, developments regarding COVID-19 happening still daily. We could spend the show talking about those, but for now, we are going to focus on those grassroots efforts happening across the Upper Peninsula, people that are doing what they can to help those being impacted. What have you been seeing and hearing from your constituents?
It's a really busy time for so many people. People just want to help. People care about their neighbors, and we have a strong community in the UP. So it's been encouraging and exciting, as you mentioned in your opening, to see all the good things that people are trying to do and trying to help each other. Food is being delivered. Music's being made. PPE is being created. Michigan Tech and LifePoint are working to provide testing now services in the UP. So there's just a lot to be really proud of the people of the UP right now.
And what is your message to everyone who is working, whether they're working on the front lines or people that are doing what they can from home to help those that are on the front lines?
Well, certainly a big thank you from myself, from the whole legislative team in the UP, and I think from the citizens of the UP. We are indebted to the people who are sacrificing their own time, their free time, their own resources often in order to help the citizens of the Upper Peninsula in this way. It's UP a special place. Real honor for me to be a public servant during this time.
I certainly agree with you about that, and I do want to thank you for your time. We're going to talk through some of those initiatives today, and we'll continue to follow what you're doing in Lansing. Thank you very much. You had over 19,000 members in your group. Did you ever expect to have such a response?
Oh, gosh, absolutely not. No, it was more or less, I mean, people obviously need this. They need hope. It's a great craft to do with your kids. It's a great craft to do on your own. And, you know, you still are supposed to get outside and it's a game to play. And the creativity has really been inspiring.
As people are walking around, they're driving to the grocery store, what do you hope they get from these displays?
I guess I look at it as hope will always be greater than fear. And these times can be very dark for so many people. And I want others to know that you're not alone.
Talk to us about this project. How did it all get started?
Well, it started as many things do on social media. And so someone tagged me in a post and asked if I could make something like this. And so that's really how it snowballed. But I just kind of grabbed a printer and from school and thought, I don't know if I could even do it. And so did it and thought, well, I know people with printers. Maybe, you know, maybe we can make an impact. And at first it was for a national movement. But then I started thinking, what about Marquette? Does Marquette have what they need? And we realized that they really don't. And so, yeah, that's really how it took off. And so I just reached out to a few educators and Northern Michigan University colleagues and said, what can we do? And the word started spreading and people started jumping on board. We have everything, people all across Michigan now, all across the UP, and we've reached over 2,000 of these face shields and really helped a ton of people. And so it's been really cool to watch.
What has the response been? Yes. And what does that mean to you?
Well, the response is amazing. And from the moment that we call or they contact us to make the request, you can hear in their voice that they're looking for answers. And so that's been really powerful, actually. And so, yeah, it's definitely the brightest spot. This is a difficult project. It's difficult to 3D print. 3D printers are expensive. They're not easy to run. Teachers don't have funding. And so many of their equipment is subpar. And so really, we're donation driven. And so that part of it is stressful. And so it's really exciting to see the other end of it, that people are excited to get it and just have that one. And it's also a morale booster, I think, for the community to see people at home banding together to help. It makes a difference.
One thing that is certain, the impact of this virus and the closures it has caused will change the way we live and do business into the future. We're talking about that today. I want to welcome our guests, State Representative Sarah Cambenzi, CEO of the Lake Superior Community Partnership, Amy Klickner, CEO of InvestUP, Marty Fatante, and CEO of Grow and Lead Community and Youth Development, Amy Quinn.
You know, this is unlike anything we've ever gone through before. You know, your legislators and the government have never done it. The governor has never done it. We have to work with healthcare professionals to make sure people are safe, work with our hospitals, but also be cognizant of the economy.
We're spending time with hundreds of small businesses that this is their livelihood. This is like a child to them, their business, and they're just gut-wrenching stories. And that's hard to take home while we're at home, I realize, but that's hard to deal with every day too, because you just want to give them the moon to make it through. I think that truly for business, uncertainty is, you know, just the most difficult thing for them to overcome. So the sooner that we can provide them guidelines and a timeline as to what they're dealing with and light at the end of the tunnel, even if that is later than we expected, what does that look like? What do they have to manage until then? How do they manage it till then when they can get their doors open again? Because all of these programs and dollars that are coming forward are great. Like Marty said, it's a step in the right direction. But truly what will save small business is getting them back into business.
A question for all of you. You know, we all know that things are going to get better. We move forward believing in that. But as things stand today, we're starting to see things, summer events here in the Upper Peninsula being canceled. Art on the Rocks, Hiawatha, the Porcupine Mountain Fest, Music Festival. Summer tourism, as Sarah spoke about earlier on, is vital to the Upper Peninsula economy. So we know these events will come back hopefully next year, but for 1 year, if we have a very quiet tourism season here in the Upper Peninsula, what does that look like? What does that do to the Upper Peninsula?
Well, I'll jump in. So I do think that these are major events with a huge local economic impact, of course. But I will offer a silver lining that people are, unfortunately, once we get moving around again, are certainly not going to be jumping on planes and traveling as, you know, as quickly as they feel secure to be able to do that. So I do think after going through this, you know, people, families, couples, whoever it is, are still going to want to get away. And so I do hope and do think that we do have the potential to draw folks up here a little more. We're not in an urban area. We're not in one of the, you know, hot spots for COVID. It's a great opportunity to do something outdoors with your family. So hopefully we can at least leverage some of those activities. It certainly won't make up for the loss of the major events. But again, the word pivot is being used in economic development every day, every hour of every day. And so how do we pivot to attract those that, you know, want to get out after this and in a safe way?
Elizabeth, I could pivot off of that to talk longer term. I think we feel there is real opportunity for us in more rural communities by virtue of this. So short-term struggle, absolutely, and some of the sacrifice that comes along with it, as you just mentioned. But when you talk about how this crisis is going to affect us down the road, I think from our perspective, there's opportunity in all that.
Because of the work of some really amazing people, we're moving forward. Joining us on the program today, six teachers, examples of all the hard work and good that continues. I'd like to welcome Eric Lynch, history teacher at Munising High School, Nikki Whitford, sixth grade teacher at Negaunee Middle School, Katie Trudgeon, pre-kindergarten teacher at Negaunee Elementary School, Sue Hewson, third grade teacher for Escanaba Area Schools, Emily Booth, band instructor at Marquette's Bothwell Middle School, and Joel Lubig, professor and associate dean of NMU's School of Education, Leadership, and Public Service. Thank you all so much for joining us today. It's really great to see all of you. To start the show, you know, when you as teachers said goodbye to your students in your classrooms 2 months ago, I imagine you never expected that would be the last time you held a traditional class in a traditional classroom for the school year. Talk about what these last 2 months have been like for you. Eric, let's start with you.
There's been a lot of a pretty mixed bag of emotions, honestly. A lot of lows, you build those relationships at school, and they're your kids that you see every day, and then to all of a sudden just not see them anymore. That's tough. You know, I think about my seniors, especially. They got their senior year cut short, you know, and not just graduation and prom and things like that. They missed those last couple months of seeing their friends before they go off to college. And that's hard on me too, because it was going to be the last couple months that I got to see them. So, a lot of anxieties, you know, just making sure kids are going to be safe, that they're going to have enough to eat. We have a lot of students who get free breakfast and lunch. I think, you know, my district, as well as many, probably most of the districts, have done a good job of making sure kids are fed. But it's just been really difficult. On the other hand, it's been nice because, you know, for as much bad as there is, I've been able to spend more time with my family. My daughter has gone from crawling to walking now, and so being able to see her grow and develop is rewarding too. But you do miss your kids, and I do a lot every day. You know, just yesterday we had our virtual class session, and beforehand I put an announcement out, and I just leveled with them. I said, you know, I've been feeling kind of down lately. It's getting hard to stay motivated, and it would really help me if they could just turn their cameras on. Because I get it, a lot of them just turn their cameras off. I do the same thing in staff meetings, but just to see their faces again, not even to have a conversation necessarily, but just to see their faces and see them react, just there as living people again, that was really helpful. And so just little things like that have really helped me just kind of stay motivated and stay positive throughout this whole thing.
I appreciated the fact that our administration gave us time on the front end of this to get a plan in place, better familiarize ourselves with Zoom and certain aspects of Google Classroom, so that we had time to, we set up emails and did practice sessions with some of our other colleagues, just so we could, you know how to effectively set up a Zoom meeting and schedule it and host it. And we did some practice sessions, you know, with Google Classrooms and such. So it was nice to have that plan in place, so we didn't just jump right in. And because we were able to figure out what we wanted to do ahead of time, I think we've been more successful because of that. Some adjustments I made is just, you know, just like any day in my classroom too, you know, every lesson changes and you just kind of go with it. A colleague and a friend of mine, Mrs. Bellinger, who I teach with, she said something early on that really resonated with me. She said to keep in mind that these students aren't independent learners yet. And that really hit home with me. And I'm trying to keep that in mind while planning lessons and, you know, sharing these learning opportunities with my students, trying not to overwhelm them. You know, many are fortunate where they have a parent or someone at home who can help them with this schooling, but not all of them do. So just keeping that in mind, you know, trying to keep them learning and interested and engaged is super important, but there's also a lot of other things going on right now. And I think we have to be mindful of that and not push too hard.
I have to give a huge applause to my parents that I have, because without them, my kids won't get anything, because my kids can't turn on a computer and go onto Google Classroom. And my co-teacher, Mrs. Bordeaux, and I, we teach lessons together. So we keep it very simple. They're listening to a story or they're listening to a mini lesson, and then we give them hands-on activities that they can do at home. So, but I have to tell you, I had a Zoom meeting and I had 18 kids the other day, and it was probably one of the best moments I had away from them, seeing all their faces and seeing like, oh, hi, Jake, like seeing the excitement in them, because I know they're missing their friends. And I know I struggle with this. So how are my five-year-olds not struggling with this?
It is about relationships. And there's no way that any of the students for these teachers or any of the teachers take a risk and try the Zoom sessions or the, you know, the asynchronous work that's being done, or to work with a parent, you know, those kinds of things, if that trust isn't there.
So with so much uncertainty in so many different areas of our lives right now, how do you address that? What are some ways that people can work through some of these emotions?
First of all, you know, as a mental health professional, I want to point out that uncertainty is present in our life all the time. We would like to believe that life is predictable and that we know for certain what's going to happen today, tomorrow, and 5 years from now, but we don't. Now that reality has become very present in a new and very vivid way, that uncertainty kind of walks with us every day. And I think one of the first things we can do is acknowledge that, in fact, this is true, that life is about uncertainty. Second part of that is to realize that we're not alone. Everybody is facing the same situations, the same issues, the same concerns, a lot of the same symptoms. So this is a humanity issue. It's not just my issue. And I think as soon as we do that, we open a little bit to it not being quite so heavy of a load. And then the third thing I would suggest is that we all have to learn to bring a lot more self-compassion to these situations. It's not something we're used to in Western culture, is engaging in self-compassion, but it's pretty critical to developing resilience, well-being, and strength to deal with these kinds of things.
Looking back, I think one thing we can all certainly agree on, that was the longest couple of months. We here at WNMU wish you all the best as we continue to navigate through all that is happening. We'll be right here working to keep you informed, up to date, and safe. I'm Elizabeth Peterson, and for all of us here at WNMU, thank you for watching and listening on Public Radio 90. Stay safe.
The program was produced by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television, in studios located in Elizabeth and Edgar Hardin Hall.